السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. إن الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء محمد رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله وصحبه وسلم ومن والاه بعد. My dear brothers and sisters, we are on the ayat of Surah Luqman related to the issue of manners, the issue of consideration for one another. And what I have been trying to do is to link that with our daily lives and with, inshallah, in today's khutbah also with relation to the global environment that we are in, and hopefully a solution that we can use which relates back with the Quran. So this is a different way of doing tafsir of the ayah, for example, to understand this in the context of how does it apply to me today in my life. Almost immediately after and as a result of the disappearance of the Soviet Union from the role of sparring partner, when President Gorbachev and his perestroika and glasnost came into being, what I like to call the MIC, which is the military industrial complex, needed another identity, another entity to fill the space of what we call the other. Now, this other is extremely important in the context of the existence and development and progress of the military industrial complex, because without the other, the very philosophy of the military industrial complex, which is now over 2000 years old, ceases to exist. That philosophy loses its meaning. That philosophy only has meaning in the context of the other, and the other is an entity to be hated, to be feared, and as a result of the propagation of this hatred and fear, we create an environment, artificially created environment of global insecurity, which enables the enactment of more and more restrictive legislation. So the more fear in the system, the more people are willing to accept loss of personal freedom, loss of personal autonomy, and are willing to accept restrictive legislation. Restrictive legislation, which in other circumstances would have produced revolutions, will in a situation of fear and insecurity, in that situation, it will actually be welcomed. It will not only not be opposed, but it will be welcomed. The whole issue is that all of this is mentally is created. It's not, it actually does not exist, but it's created. So therefore, when the Soviet Union played this role from the, almost before the Second World War, but definitely after the Second World War, what we then know as the Cold War, the Soviet Union played this role of being the other. And by Soviet Union, I mean Soviet Union and communism as an ideology. So this was a combination of both. So it was the Soviet Union, Eastern Bloc countries, China, and so on and so forth. So all of these, Vietnam came into that. So these played the role of the global other. I am deliberately not naming countries, not because I've got any fear of naming countries. But the reason is because the MIC, the military industrial complex, has nothing to do with countries, has nothing to do with political affiliations, has nothing to do with any ideology other than the ideology of dominating the globe through military power. And this military industrial complex is not run by countries, contrary to what people like to believe, but it is run by a very small group of men. There is not a single woman involved. It is run by a very small group of extremely powerful, extremely wealthy men, and you can't even imagine the kind of wealth we are talking about here, who have no affiliation to any country, who political boundaries do not bound them. They do not travel like you and me. They don't need visas like you and me. They can go where they want. They can do what they want. Laws of the world do not apply to them. We're talking about that. And that is this group which runs political entities which we like to call countries. Now, when the Soviet Union disappeared, there was a need for another entity in that place of the global other. And that entity was chosen, not accidentally. This was planned, pre-planned before the disappearance of the Soviet Union, because that was pretty clear, closer to the time. That entity was what I like to call Global Islam, GI. Now, this again has nothing to do with Islam as a religion. It has to do with the global entity of Islam and Muslims wherever they might be in the world. I'm talking from my social scientist hat. This is how global politics is run. Now, why did they choose Global Islam? Because Global Islam fits the bill not only equally well, but actually much better than the Soviet Union did. And that's because it has certain key and unique properties which the Soviet Union, being at the end of the day one country or a group of countries, they didn't have some of these very important characteristics. But Global Islam, GI, has these qualities. What are these qualities? Number one, it's mysterious. For most of the world, they don't know what it means. Also because we are mysterious. Think about how much of interaction we have with non-Muslims. Our masjids are closed to non-Muslims, mostly, or effectively closed. In some cases, actually closed. Our cultures are a mystery, especially to the West, because that's where the source of power is, in the West. So mysterious. The benefit of having an enemy which is mysterious is that you are then free to ascribe whatever you want to that enemy, and it will be believed because there is no counter narrative. People do not know facts. They cannot put a face to a name. So they believe whatever comes to them, if it is dished out well. And obviously, we are talking about people who are the masters of spin doctrine. Second one is Global Islam is different. Meaning, vast majority is not white, not Western. Different. It's difficult to hate people like yourself. But it's very easy to hate people who are different, who we see as different, because everything different can be and is usually interpreted as negative. For example, take in our own country, a vegetarian is different from a non-vegetarian. But you know and I know, what is the interaction between vegetarian and non-vegetarian? Is it interaction of I respect your difference, or is it to say ye to bakri hai ghas khata hai, ya ye to maas khata hai ganda hai? Which one? So both of them, there is hatred easy because it is different. Third one is a history of adversarial relationships. Principle in that being the smarting and the hurt from having lost the Crusades to Salah ad-Din and others. That history is not forgotten. We forget our history. The opposition doesn't. And second one is the long centuries of occupation or rule by the Ottomans in Europe is also something which is very strongly opposed and hated. That's how the Spanish Inquisition came into being, not after the Ottomans, but before that, with the end of the Uthmani, of the Banu Umayya Khilafah and Banu Abbas Khilafah in Andalusia. So there's a history of hatred, history of adversarial relationships. In this country also, you see that mostly North India. Then, the fact that this entity called global Islam is globally ineffective. It has no central military power, it has no central authority, it has no central government, it has no central leadership, it has no central nothing. Globally, it is completely ineffective. Numbers are there, but other than numbers, nothing else. Next one is compliant leadership. Now, this is the result of very clearly thought out action, where after the Second World War, the remnants of the Ottoman Empire were parceled off, made into small little countries, and was handed over to local thakurs, local kings, who were very happy with that. And who became a local king? The one who was compliant with whatever ideology he was supposed to carry on. So, the local leadership is created by you and supported by you and cannot exist without your support. So, obviously, it is compliant. Next one is immunity for us. Us meaning the military industrial complex and people of that area, meaning that this is an entity which can be bombed, which can be invaded, which can be killed, and so on and so forth. Nothing will happen to us. This was, if you think back and compare mentally with the identity of the Soviet Union, many of these things didn't apply. Cold, why was there a cold war? Because a hot war was not feasible. The cold war was not because of any kindness in the heart. It was because a hot war would mean that you also would burn. But in the context of global Islam, you can do what you want. Nothing will happen to you. Then, nebulous as our own identity is concerned, we are many things to many people, which means that you can attack this global Islam anywhere you like. You can ascribe whatever term you like to it, war on terror, Islamic terrorism, call it what you want. There is no counter narrative to that. So, all of these axes of evil, yeah, nice terminology. I mean, all of these are the work of spin doctors. So, all of this can be done because it is nebulous. You can say this and simultaneously in the same breath without even breaking your breath, you can say that, but we have nothing against Islam. Which incidentally is true. We have nothing against Islam as a religion, as a theology, as an ideology. We are not talking about that Islam at all. And finally, which of course, is like manna from heaven, it is a God-given internal conflict within global Islam. And this is of course, you know and I know, we are the ones who fund that, we fuel it for ourselves, we do it to ourselves. All the divisions and more divisions, and every day there is a new division based on some even less important factor. All of this, of course, is hugely, hugely helpful. I mean, I don't think anyone in their wildest dreams would have even imagined that something like this could happen, but it was given to them on a platter, and you gave it and I gave it. So, then we can't blame them for using it. This is the situation that we find ourselves in. Now, when we are in that situation, I've been writing a series of articles about this, and those of you who are on the group, you would have seen them. There's one called Give a Dog a Bad Name. So, read that. In this situation, what must we do? And that's what I am going to try and quickly sum up today. The first and most important thing to do is to never lose hope. Not because you are doing anything special, you are not. But even if you did nothing, the fact of the matter is that in the history of nations, it's like the wave of an ocean. It rises and falls. Every nation, anywhere in the world, any period of time, there is a time of rising and there is a time of falling. If you read history, then you will see that this is it's like a universal law. There's no nation, Muslim, non-Muslim, whatever, which has always been on the rise or which has always been in the trough of the ocean. So, therefore, permanence is not a phenomena of this world, though mankind has eternally wasted its time in trying to find it, be that through searching for freedom from death personally or a legacy that will be everlasting. What we Muslims are going through now is neither new nor the last time we will see this. This happened before and it will happen again. What happened before and what will happen again is also the height of civilization, power, influence and opportunity to benefit the world, inshallah. Now, how we use that will dictate how long we will continue to have that opportunity, just like in the past. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave us the opportunity to be beneficial and took it away when we stopped being beneficial. So, history taught me two lessons. I graduated history formally and I have been reading history all my life. I love reading history. The first lesson that I learned from history is that only those who benefit others remain, while those who take for themselves from others will be removed. Read the history of the Roman Empire, read the Greeks, read the Muslim history of the Muslims, read who you want. Universal law. Those who give remain, those who take are removed. And the second law is that we don't learn from history. If we don't learn from history, we are condemned to repeat it. And that is what I believe is happening to us now. I am mentioning this more as a caveat about what we must do going forward to get our boat out of the trough in the ocean and back on the peak of the wave. Because in the trough, all that you can see are the massive deep blue seas around you, each enough to swamp and sink you 1,000 times. Terrifying, depressing, despair. On the peak, you ride the massive blue and see the horizon, the shoreline and safety, while racing towards it with the wind in your hair and the ocean foam flecking your brow. Exhilarating, exciting, hope. In one situation, the power of the ocean seems to be your enemy, bent on destroying you. In the other, it is the power of the ocean taking you to your goal, supporting you and using its massive force to drive you forward. In reality, nothing changed in the ocean. It's the same ocean, the same waves, with the same power. What changed is the position of your boat. In one situation, the power of the waves is a lethal danger. In another, it is an asset, support, and your own motive power. We don't control the ocean, but the boat is ours. The one who tries to control the ocean and despairs at his own insignificance is bound to perish. While the one who focuses on his boat and tries to use the force of the ocean to his advantage always succeeds. And that's why they say, there are no favorable winds, only good sailors. The choice is ours, for the boat is ours, and we are in it. So let us learn how to sail and enjoy the ride. I base my contention about the possibility of success of us as people, once again inshallah, and on what I am about to propose. On some research data which is based on what we know as the butterfly effect in chaos theory. In one line, the butterfly effect is defined as a butterfly flapped its wings in New Mexico, which triggered a storm, a tornado in China. And I won't go into the whole aspects of chaos theory which proves this, but let's stay with that. So, effectively what we are saying is that the single apparently insignificant action of an insignificant individual can have massive global impact, provided it's done at the right time in the right place. My submission to you, my brothers and sisters, is that Islam is the name of a practice. It's not a philosophy or a theology. Like judo, only the one who practices it can benefit from Islam. It's not related to any particular race or nationality or country. Anyone who practices Islam will benefit from it. So therefore, the question to ask ourselves is, am I practicing Islam? It's a serious question to ask yourself. Am I practicing Islam? Practice is a matter of visible effect. Practice is a matter of action. It's not whatever you believe in your heart alone. What you believe in your heart is what drives the action. So, is Islam visible in my life? The good thing about bad times is that they strengthen you. The blow that doesn't break your back only makes you stronger. So, in this context, I want to share some thoughts about what I think we should do going forward. And then, inshallah, my solution. Number one is never react. Never ever react. Always respond. Reacting means that you are a puppet and the strings that move you are in the hands of somebody else. No puppet in history ever won against its own handler unless it cut its own strings. So, never react, always respond. Second one is always respond. But respond with serious thought before responding. Response without serious thought is reaction. It's not response. A response is where you take charge of yourself and you decide, number one, whether to respond at all. Silence is sometimes the best and most powerful response. Somebody wrote a very insulting and provocative letter to Gandhiji. When Gandhiji got the letter, somebody delivered the letter to him. He read the whole letter. It was 2 pages. He took out the clip, paper clip, which was holding the 2 pages together, and he threw the 2 pages into the garbage. So, the man who gave him the letter, he said, but aren't you going to respond? Gandhiji showed him the paper clip and he said, I have taken what was valuable. This is a response, right? Saying nothing is a response. Third one is, remember that restraint takes more strength of character than reacting. We know the hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He said, the one who remains silent in the face of provocation is stronger than a wrestler who can beat somebody in a wrestling match. Because restraint takes strength. The strongest person is the one who remains calm in the face of provocation. But this won't happen automatically. It has to be cultivated and built. It's very painful, but once you get the hang of it, you realize that there are few pleasures more enjoyable than to see the frustration of your opponent when you fail to rise to his bait. Number four is that to understand that restraint comes from confidence. Confidence in yourself and confidence in what you believe in. Confidence comes from knowledge, which is the knowledge of Islam. Today we have a situation where we don't study, we don't learn about Islam, and therefore we have one of two situations. Either we are apologetic about Islam, we don't want to look like Muslims, we don't want to walk and talk like Muslims, we don't want to behave like Muslims because we are ashamed of being Muslims. Seriously, that is the reality. We are ashamed of being Muslim. My question is, why are you a Muslim? Go be something else. Go be that which you are proud of. Why? Who do you think you are doing a favor to by being a Muslim when you are ashamed of being a Muslim? So we are ashamed of being Muslims and so we are apologetic about Islam and everything about Islam. So that's one reaction. The other reaction is the opposite, which is hugely aggressive, over the top, which is actually worse than the first reaction. Now, both of these are completely unnecessary and totally counterproductive. Confidence comes from knowing yourself, being confident in that, being proud of it, practicing it, and being open to other people who may see the world differently from yourself. There's no need to get into a combative situation with everything else. Number five is that to understand that strangeness enables stereotyping and hatred. When people can put a face to a name, then it is difficult to stereotype. And it is difficult to hate when the face they put to a name is a face of a person they love. The example I always give is that if I ask you today, generally speaking, if I say, what is your opinion about Christians? Vast majority of the world will say, good people. And if I say, well, you know, look at George Bush and look at this one and look at that one and look at this war and that war, all run by Christians. You say, no, those are exceptions. Christians are good people. If I ask you, how do you say that? Why do you say that? Now, I'm not trying to say they're not good people. I'm just asking you a question. Why do you say that? Invariably, you will be thinking, when you say Christian, the thought in your mind or the picture in your mind is of your school teacher in the convent school that you went to. Vast majority of us studied in English medium convent schools. We were taught by good people, by good teachers, many of whom were nuns or priests, so you called them sister or father. They didn't abuse you, they didn't beat the daylights out of you, they didn't curse you, they taught you well, they treated you well with respect. And so you have imprinted in your mind this impression that Christians are good people. I've got no problem with that. Most welcome. Think that about the whole world, that's good for you and me. The point I'm saying is that what is the picture in the mind of the person who is told that Muslims are bad? What is the picture in that person's mind? That is the key point. The key point is that if that person also, the moment somebody says anything negative about Muslims, if the picture that pops up in the mind of the person listening to that is of a Muslim that they love, of a Muslim that they respect, of a Muslim who was good to them, who helped them and so on and so forth, then the world will be a different place. So strangeness enables stereotyping. We have to learn to open our homes, open our lives, open our masajids, open our organizations and so on to people, to show them how we do things, and that must be the best way of doing it. I was in the UK in 2015. Speaking at the International Conference on Education in Oxford, and we were having lunch, all the leaders of different Catholic schools and the head of British Education Department and various people, all of us were sitting together, all the heads of the Muslim schools of UK and so on. We were sitting there, and one of them told us a little anecdote. He said that the Department of Education had become extremely, suddenly become extremely tough with regard to enforcement of safety and security procedures, student safety, education standards and various things. And the Muslim schools saw that as an attack on them. They say, no, they are anti-Muslim, that's why they are doing all this, because they want to shut down the madrasas and this and that. You go and ask them, well, what is the quality of education in your school? No, that's not the issue. I said, hello? How is that not the issue? So this person tells me, he said there was this meeting of the Department of Education and this was going on, and the Christian schools were also complaining about the Department of Education becoming so tough and so on and so forth. And there was a representative of the Jewish schools. The Jewish schools guy said, why don't you simply enforce our standards in all your schools? He told the Department of Education, we don't need your standards, you take our standards. And he said, the dead silence. Because even the Department of Education knows that the Jewish schools are run to a standard which is superior to the standard that the law requires. Now, my point is, what prevents you and me from doing that? Right? So, understand that this strangeness, if we can create a system which is excellent, which is beautiful, and you can present it to the world, that is the best way of shutting everybody's mouth. So, finally now, the issue of the solution for all of this. Now, if I was asked to describe the single biggest problem that we have globally as Muslims in one word, The word I would use is image. We have a very, very serious image issue. And that image issue is the thing that enables the military industrial complex and all those who run it and all the propaganda creators and all these spin doctors and so on and so forth. Our image, our negative global image is that is the thing which enables them to keep us in the place of the other, the global other. So we need to change this image. Now what is image? What is my image? My image is what you think of me, right? How else do you define image? What is my image? My image is what you think of me. Like this guy here. Once upon a time, I used to call him boy. Now I can't. He's now a married human being. He said to me that there are only two people in this world he is afraid of. One is me and the other one is that man over there. Who is his father? Now, I don't know whether that is good news or bad news for me and Hyderabad. But this is what he told me. I'm afraid of only two people. So, image is what? Image is what the others think of us, right? Now, we need to change this. Now, you might say, well, this is all, you know, high funda stuff. I am Ahmedabad and what not. How do we do it? And that's what I am about to tell you. Very, very simple. Simple math. The math is, Muslims globally are supposed to be 1/5, 20% of the world population. Give or take a few here and there, but that's the number that is usually bandied about. Say, we are 1/5 of the world population, 20%. What does that mean? It means that for every Muslim, there are 4 people who are not Muslim. Yes? Simple math, right? So, for every one person Muslim, there are 4 people who are not Muslim. Listen carefully. Changing global image for Muslims consists of convincing 4 people that you are the best thing that happened to them. That's it. That is it. Can you do that? Can you convince 4 people? I'm not talking about the whole world. Just 4 non-Muslim people. Can you convince 4 people? Not by PR strategies, not by some global communication program, not by TV channels, not by sweet talking. By your actions, by your dealing with them, by your behavior. Can you convince 4 non-Muslim people that you are the best thing that happened to them? Is this doable? What do you think? Yes? Is it easily doable or is it difficult? Easy or difficult? Easy. Very easy. Most of you, at least the ones I am seeing here, most of you are probably already there. Right? If you are not there, well, you know, make the effort. 4 people. That's it. If we do this globally, every Muslim convinces 4 people that he or she is the best thing that happened to them, world opinion will completely change. And then the MIC will vanish. Because without the other, the military industrial complex cannot exist. People who build weapons, people who build ordnance, people who build ammunition need a place to use it. Otherwise, there is no market. Wars happen because wars make profit. If you do what I am telling you to do and this global opinion changes, there is no profit in war anymore. Which means that the people running the world will have to figure out another way of running the world. Now, you might say, well, this looks like a pipe dream, you know, over the head. So, let me come back to another principle in statistics, which is called the lily pad problem. The lily pad problem is, again, very simple math. The lily pad problem is that if a lily pad or lily pads double in area, double in size meaning area, every day, in 20 days, they will completely cover the pond from end to end. Let me repeat that. If a lily pad doubles in area every day, in 20 days, it will completely cover the pond. How many days will it take to cover half the pond? How many days? 19 days, right? 19 days it will take to cover half the pond. And then the other half of the pond, how many days? One day. One day. Until the 19th day, you are going to see at the most half the pond, and if the pond is the size of Hussain Sagar, for example, you is almost as good as not seeing. But then suddenly, on the 20th day, you wake up and the entire pond is covered. Because they are doubling in area every day. How does that relate to what I have said? This issue of convincing four people that you are the best thing that happened to them. Initially, it will you have to go through the 19 days. On day 1, it will look like nothing. On day 2, it will look like nothing. On day 3, it will look like nothing. And so on and so on. But we continue to do that. And then a day will come when people wake up in the morning and the Muslims will be the most beloved creatures on the face of the planet. It will not be magic. It will not be instantaneous. It will be something, the result of consistent effort. So, I am giving you a solution which does not require money, which does not require special education, which does not require training, which does not require you to take even one single minute out of your life and do something differently. It requires nothing. It just requires you and me to change the way we behave with others. That's it. Let's look at the worst case scenario. Let's look at a scenario where all that I've said is wrong. And all that you have is four people who think that you are the best thing that happened to them. And tell me, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? And since we are connected with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, all the reward of having made the effort, of having tried to project Islam and so on and so forth, all of which will be highly useful to us in our cover. So what's wrong with that? Even if you fail, there's nothing wrong with it. And inshallah, I'm not talking about failure. I'm talking about success. Inshallah, it will come. Because faith, what is faith? When you come to the end of the light of all that you know, and are about to step off into the darkness of the unknown, faith is to know that one of two things will happen. There will be something firm to stand on, or you will be taught how to fly. Ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to accept your coming here, to be pleased with you, to help you and to enable you to change the view and the situation of the Muslims globally. Because who are those Muslims? You and me. Wa sallallahu ala nabiyil kareem wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajmain. برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين والحمد لله رب العالمين.